Hi, this is Carolina. Let's go beyond the throttle. Hi guys, it's Carolina and this is Beyond the Throttle. Today we spoke with one of my favorite people in the whole wide world, Craig Rudsmith, and learned a little bit like about his first bike, you know, cooking, and it was, I always feel attracted to people that are passionate about what they do for life. They are themselves without apologies. They just themselves in they don't compartmentalize who they are, and they're like beautiful individuals that are just themselves, and it just inspires me to do the same thing. So I hope you guys enjoy this conversation that we had. This is Craig. You're so busy all the time.
I'm always busy.
Okay, the most important question. How is Nova?
Nova's good.
Yes, she good?
Yeah, she's always good. I spoil her.
I know, she's so cute though.
I love her.
And the kiddos, everybody good?
Yes. Everybody's good. Good. How about you? Everyone good?
Yeah, everybody's okay. Like the kids back to like school is school. You know how he did like
right.
Virtual learning, and he's liking it. He's actually playing in the mariachi band. Yes, I mean, I know.
That's cool. That's awesome.
Amazing. Yeah, he was like, yeah. My teacher said that I was good with the fiddle, so he asked me to play with the mariachi band, and I said yes, and I'm like, okay, cool. So. Yeah.
That's great.
So, I was like, but it kind of makes me like, it's exciting because it's getting like close to his heritage. He's my part of my heritage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, so that's awesome.
Yeah.
So I wish my kids, one of my kids is Australian, but my three kids here, only one of them's really interested in their Australian heritage. So, yeah.
I mean, one day we're going to take them all and visit, you know?
We'll go to Mexico and Australia.
Of course, yes. We do like a road trip.
Yeah.
Well, not so much a road trip all the way to Australia.
No, you can't drive to Australia.
I know.
It's an island.
I know. It's gonna. This whole thing is gonna be just me laughing.
Yeah. All right. Did you start recording already?
Oh yeah, totally.
Good.
So. No, but like the main thing, like this, like when we're like talking, and then I started like when I was traveling this last time I visited you, a lot of things were like with the girls that I met, we were like, I wish I had more time to just talk, you know what I mean? Like not even like motorcycles, like with the girls that are founders with, you know, and I met like some girls that are founders in other cities. You know, we just started chatting about like tacos, our dogs, you know, and it was like, like the way that we, like our community is so interesting because we're like from so many different places that we, maybe if we didn't have a motorcycle in common, we would never, you know, get together.
Oh yeah, I completely, yeah. Well, think about how we met because of motorcycles. So yeah, no, I completely agree.
And then it's like,
unfortunately, there's you meet a lot of assholes that have motorcycles too, but you got to take the good with the bad, you know.
I mean, it's like in anything, right? Like like somebody just like reached out to our Lita's, he Lita's Houston email saying like, how do I start? And like Lita was like, just grab a beater bike and start going around, you know, like start practicing and take a class, you know, if you feel more comfortable with that, you know. And so it's very interesting like how different people come from, you know, like they grew up with motorcycles, and some people didn't grow up with motorcycles at all, like me. Like I wish I had a motorcycle, you know, in my life when I was little, you know.
But right.
We had trucks and all that.
No, it's never too late. Obviously, yeah. Look at what you've done. You know, you've ridden all over America almost. So it's never too late. It's more than I have.
Well, I'm gonna take you. I'm gonna put like a sidecar to take you. And you know what is very funny? Because I have this girlfriend in Mexico and she kept seeing me riding, and then she just got a bike and an MB Gusta, beautiful bike. And she was like, I saw you riding, and I just like, oh, I can do it. So you like never
She
know
must be rich if she got an MV Agusta. She must have a lot of money.
It's a beautiful bike, and it's like a
yes, it is.
Too. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Is wow. I know, like, your favorite bike is the Moto Guzzi, or
well, I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but I love them. I love all motorcycles. Maybe yeah, I love Italian motorcycles. That's why I love MV Agustas too. But I'm sort of I love Ducatis and MV and okay. Moto Guzzis, and they're two. They're both Italian, but they're two very different motorcycles.
If somebody asks, like, how do you pick, if I have, like, five motorcycles, how do you pick a bike? You pick the one that is depending on the ride, right?
Yeah, depending on what you're going to do with it. You know, it's like, the thing is, when I was younger, I rode all over Australia. I'd go on long rides. And as I got up, you know, just probably in the last 20 years, I'm not interested in going on long rides. I'd rather go out and ride really fast for half an hour or an hour. And then, you know, that's what I enjoy. I like just going fast. And yeah, I want to be exhausted in 45 minutes on a motorcycle. I don't want to be exhausted after riding for 8 hours.
So like going
but, you know, I understand why people do it. It's just my preference. And but if I was going to take a long trip, yeah, I'd probably take a Moto Guzzi. You know, when I go to Italy, I'm very fortunate. You know, I go to Mandello Dolorio, which is where Moto Guzzi is from. And I've always been given a bike to ride when I'm there. And obviously it's a Moto Guzzi. And I rode around Italy a lot, and around Lake Como especially. And I'd rather do that on a Moto Guzzi than a Ducati. But, you know, you give me nice windy road somewhere, I'd rather have a Ducati. But yeah, if I was going to go on a long cruise on the interstate, probably a Harley would be, yeah. You know, it just depends what you're going to do.
Yeah. It all depends on like, because even like around town, like I would not take like a big, big bike. I like, you know, the little bikes.
Or, right.
You know, yeah. So it all depends on also like on your skills. Because I've seen people are like, they buy something and they mod it and then they haven't even ridden it. It's like, well, why don't you just ride it first and, you know, get comfortable and then learn right. What you like, you know? So it's very interesting to see that. But like, yeah, the people, I feel like that's been like something very interesting, like the people, and then like see them grow in their riding and like, you know, and in like the communities. That's been like super inspiring to me, you know, like, or like, and seeing you and seeing other people like in their lives, you know, in their life milestones, like become parents, you know, become like something in their careers that is like, you know, going more, you know, like uncles or, you know.
Right.
Even dog parents, you know.
Yeah.
Seriously, so that's kind of like so like one of the things that I'm like I want to learn more and want to like know more, like what's the last book that you're reading? Are you reading something right now? You know, are you
right?
Yeah.
There's a book that I read recently, which is especially for motorcycle people, but even if you're not into motorcycles, it's a really interesting book. And it's called Shop Class as Soul Craft. And it's written by Matthew, I can't think of his name. It'll be easy to find if you Google it, but it's a fascinating book. It's a guy that I think he had two PhDs and he worked in Washington, D.C. in a government think tank and did all this stuff. And then after doing this for years, he's like, this is not what I want to do. And so he wrote this book about, you know, how basically shop class and they're taking that out of schools. But not only that, you know, we raise our children to, you know, you need to be a doctor, a lawyer, a professional. It's like, oh, you don't want to be a mechanic or you don't want to be a carpenter. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that's what this book talks about, is how society's changing, where we've over the, you know, last 20 or 30 years, especially, we've dumbed everyone down. Nobody knows how to work on that. Like, I grew up, I'm old enough. Everyone knew how to change a tire, jumpstart a car, rebuild a carburetor. It was just something you grew up knowing. Now I'm so surprised with a lot of younger people, you know, have no idea how to do that. And that's kind of, this book talks about that sort of stuff. One of the chapters he talks about how, where, you know, 30 years ago, if you bought an appliance from Sears, it came with a manual that told you all the parts. If something broke, you would order the part and fix it. Well, now there's no manual. It tells you how to turn it on and off. That's about it. And then it says on the back, it says no user serviceable parts, you know, call this number. And so we've sort of got this society where we've taught people not to do this. And the ironic thing is, a good mechanic or a good carpenter or a good plumber or electrician probably makes as much as, you know, an average doctor, because there's a shortage of people that know how to do this. And that's one thing, when I came, especially when I came to America, I was surprised, you know, because I can, you know, I'm a mechanic and a metal ship, whatever. Yeah, you know, I'm a machinist by trade and I could do all this stuff. And people were like, wow, how do you know how to do that? I'm like, I don't know. I just grow up doing it. I was never taught to be scared of, you know, take something apart, or, you know, if something broke, try and fix it yourself. But I see now, probably because motorcycles have become more mainstream, it used to be a subculture. Now it's still subculture, but not as small as it used to be. And a lot of people, just average people, are getting into motorcycles and they're changing their own oil. They're, you know, people are starting to, you know, the phrase, when I started doing this, there was no such thing as a motorcycle builder. The factory was the builder. It was called, you customized the motorcycle. But now it's called, you know, people are called a motorcycle builder. And it's, I find that strange. You know, people ask me what I do for a living. I don't say I'm a motorcycle builder. If I was welding today, I say I'm a welder. If I was putting an engine together today and somebody says, oh, what do you do for a living? I'm a mechanic. If I was machining, so I don't know. It just, I'm a bunch of different things, I suppose. And it's just the sum of, hey, I think it's the sum of all these things. And it's like, I, as you know, every time I build a bike, I try and do something different so I learn something new. I always create a challenge because that's what I enjoy. Why build the same thing over and over again, or do it the same way? It's like, you don't learn anything. You don't grow.
And there's a, there's a difference between buying all of the parts and putting all of the parts together, like as like a what you call it, like a, you know,
and an assembler.
Actually making the parts, yeah, assembling, then right, making the parts. That's a difference from a builder, I feel, than somebody that's actually building, you know, like the creating right the part, like, you know, yeah.
What's not a bad way to do things? You know, if somebody, if you get your first motorcycle and you decide, you know, you're going to customize it and buy a bunch of aftermarket parts and bolt them on, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's too many people in this industry. Ironically, in the motorcycle industry or society, whatever you want to call it, everyone, the thing is, to me, a motorcycle is a, it's a thing, it's meant to be, you know, show your personality, and you're, and it's meant to be a thing of independence. Yet a lot of people in this motorcycle industry world, whatever you want to call it, are just too quick to like pick on someone like, oh, you shouldn't do that, or you shouldn't do that. It's like, fuck it, it's your motorcycle. You do what the hell you want. If you want to buy a bunch of parts, bolt them on, fine. If you want to have a completely original bike, fine. If you want to start making parts, fine. It doesn't matter. And that's why people say, oh, you know, I built a couple of Harleys. And somebody, oh, I didn't know you were a Harley guy. No, I'm a motorcycle guy. Yeah. It's like, I don't care.
I know, like, you're like right now working on a sporty. You're like, right, you just like motorcycles, period, you know?
Right. I like things with engines. And it's, I've got some weird motorcycles too. I've got a, I've got a 1957 Mako 400 Twin, which is an old German bike. I just think it's cool as hell. And I've got a 57 BSA Bantam, which was actually, I got another one. It was my first bike when I was a kid. And so it's a nostalgic reason. But I've got two supercharged Ducatis too. And I've got a turbocharged Moto Guzzi. It's like,
and they're badass. Yeah.
I'm a bad, yeah. Can I? That, yeah, of course. But that's a silly thing. It's like, and the other thing, like you, it's like, and I've always encouraged you, because, you know, that thing that, you know, women like motorcycles has been, you know, it's a sausage fest, you know, it's all guys. And it's like, there's a, well, but the thing that annoys is like these women that's like, oh, I'm a woman and I rode a motorcycle. What big deal? What do you want, a medal? You know?
Yeah. It's
like, and the thing, I don't care. Like I said, you and I have, you know, I've helped show you things, and it's not because I feel sorry for you because you're a woman trying to do it. It's because you're a person trying to do it.
Yes, exactly. And I think a lot of people like either go into like, oh, I'm a woman, I'm a victim kind of thing, or I'm a woman and like, look at me, I'm doing something kind of thing, which is like, yes, in a way, because I'm a woman and I've seen the sausage fest,
right?
You know, and you try to, you there, some people come to help you, but they want something else.
Right.
And so I noticed that, or like when you don't, my dog, when you don't do like a date them or like give them into like something
right.
that is more into like that area. You know, I've seen people being not so nice and try to put your reputation into like something, but I feel like your walk is your talk, right? If you walk the walk,
right.
that's talking the talk, and you don't have to go and defend yourself or do anything like if there's like drama. And two, like for me, writing with the leaders, it's not so much of like, hey, or being a founder, it's not like, hey, we're women and we hate you guys. It's more of like encouraging the women to go and ride with the bigger right. groups that have the men and women, and then can go into larger groups. And that's something that I've seen a lot, is like the new girls, they first come to us because they feel more, not like secure, well, probably
safer.
More comfortable. Yes,
yeah.
To come in and ask questions that maybe like when I ask you things, I'm like, what is this button, you know? And you'll be like, that's the engine, you know? Like, you know, like things that I don't care what anybody thinks of me, but I know that some people do care.
Right.
And then when they come and ask, like, we just change oil on my bike and somebody else's bike. And she was like, oh my God, I paid $300 for this. And I was like, yep, you know, you just get your oil and get your little, like, I have everything else. I have the tool and I have the where to put the oil and get your filter. And we did it, you know, and it's super easy, but it's like that whole culture of like, you know, come and save us, you know, or that the things that keep being perpetuated as like, oh, two genders, like, who cares? I am a person, you are a person who is just on a ride. But I
right.
feel like we creating the spaces for women so that they can go and join the older, you know, the major groups.
Right.
You know, that kind of like, it's a good start. I know that, like, you know, I was my dad's little, like, not boy, but I was like his little helper.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
So it was always like, you know, we were opening the toaster, opening the, you know, the refrigerator. And I was like soldering when I was like six, you know, seven. Because I'm like, I want to help, you know. Because I had never been of like, oh, I want, yeah, I like the dolls, but not so much. I'd rather be opening shit and be outside playing with the mud. And I think it's more about like a personality trait than a gender thing. And people mm-hmm. just generalize things, you know? But like going back to like the shops and like building, like when people mod, it's awesome. When people like do and try different things, I think that's awesome. But like the asking the questions, you know, like, do you feel like a lot of people come and ask you questions and you're just kind of like, well, you can try? Or do you feel like, you know what I mean? Like people are like, how do you do this? And it's like, you know, do you feel like it's a lot of like question, you know, of like
right.
doing things or how do you feel? Like it's more of like people just trying different things or?
Well, I think it's, you know, society has sort of dictated that women are supposed to, you know, make cookies and sew dresses and, you know, knit and shit like that. And, you know, men are supposed to do, you know, drive trucks and whatever, you know,
yeah.
And it's so stupid. The thing is for me, I, you know, growing up in Australia, it's, yeah, there's some sexism, but it's not as bad as a lot of other countries. And I grew up with, you know, I have no brothers. I have two sisters. I also have three daughters. And, and it's like, you know, so I grew up, you know, I was raised with equal but different, you know, I like women yeah. to be feminine, but, you know, if a woman wants to, it's like, I like to cook. It's like a passion and it's a hobby of mine.
That's
and it's
really
like,
good.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, I love it. And it's like, it's because I like to create, I think. So it's the same
yeah.
as you know, why I enjoy building motorcycles. And it's like,
it's
you know, I remember
good.
When I was a kid. Well, thank you. When I was a kid, on Sundays, I used to bake a lot. And I think my dad thought I was gay. And yeah, okay, my dad's old school. I love him. But I think he was worried I was gay because on Sundays, like I'd make like from scratch, chocolate eclairs, like
no
sponge
way.
Cakes and stuff. And I enjoyed it. I liked doing it. It's like, I don't
okay,
care.
That is like the next time I come visit, we're baking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. I love it. I love to cook. But it's like, you know, I'm very fortunate. My parents, you know, even they come from a much older generation. My parents were born in, you know, the early 30s. And I don't know, there was never any, I wasn't raised with, you're going to do this, or you're going to, yes. Actually, I know how to sew too.
Oh, no,
and I learned how to sew. Yeah, I learned how to sew when I was young. I think it's just, I just like to know how to do things.
Yeah.
And it's curiosity. And, I was taught, not to have any fear, not just not have fear to do something and maybe get it wrong, but not have fear that somebody's going to pick on you for doing something that, like, if you're male, because it's effeminate. Like, who gives a shit?
Yeah, who cares? Yeah, it's like, more of like, I think like it's more of like a, what you say, like that place of curiosity and exploration. Like when I'm in chops or doing something like editing, and then something that is like creative, I am just 100% in. You know, you're present,
right.
And I'm not distracted with something else. And I saw you like, at your shop, and you were just like doing, and it was like so beautiful. Just I love seeing that there's like nothing. And you just create something from your mind.
That's the most satisfying thing, is creating. I think that's how I ended up with a lot of my bikes. You know, the way I customize them, build them, whatever you want to call it, is I like to make everything myself. And it's, I just find it satisfying. And I mean, I built, there's a bike with the engine in the front wheel I built for the Haas Museum. Basically, I made everything except the tires. And it wasn't until I finished I realized that I'd done that. I made the engine, I made the wheels, I made the frame, the bodywork, made everything. And it was, and it wasn't something that I thought about as I was doing it. It's just I did it. And then when I finished, I'm like, holy shit, the only thing I bought besides the materials to build it was the tires.
Would it be hard to make tires?
Yeah, that's not, probably
by rubber.
Yeah, no, I'd probably do it so extreme. I'd go and get a rubber tree and get my own rubber. No, I'm not going to do that.
Like, what happened? He's a farmer of rubber trees.
But it's, but again, if somebody doesn't want to do that, and there's people that like completely original stock bikes, and they, good for them.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
It's the other thing, I never build my bikes to impress anyone except myself.
Yeah.
And it's like that's why.
I challenge you, right?
Right, exactly. And it's the funny thing is, though, every bike I've ever built, and I built a lot of motorcycles or customized or whatever you want to call it, everyone, whenever I finished it, I'm like, wow, if I did that again, I'd do it completely differently. I'm never satisfied. And I mean, I'm proud of what I've done, but it's like, I always second guess, like, okay, so next time, I've learned something from this. So next time, even though it's a different bike, I'm going to approach something differently. And it's like, I guess it's, I've been doing this for over 40 years, and that's why I'm not bored with it. Come to my shop 7 days a week, basically. And it's, people say, oh, you work so much. And it's like, I don't really work. I don't really have a job.
Yeah. I love that. Like, what is that saying? Like,
Do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. Yeah. And it's, I feel very fortunate. And it's funny. It's the other thing, media, the motorcycle media says nice things about me, and people say nice things about my work and everything. And it's like, I honestly don't think I'm that good. I think I'm good at it, but I'm not as good as I think some people tend to portray me as being. I'm different to some of the, because what got me noticed was I made those silly videos years ago. And I think it's more that people found me amusing more than anything. And so they started looking at my motorcycle. Yeah. Well, it's not really amusing. I'm just an idiot. People laugh at me. But I think that's what got me noticed. And I think it was my approach to it, because I'm just like, well, fuck, just do this. And
I just. Being original, right? Being yourself.
Yeah,
in a world where everybody's trying to be the cool shit and you're just being yourself, that's super attractive.
I always remember what my dad said to me when I was young. When you're young, you're a teenager, you're trying to be cool. My dad said, son, the secret to being cool is not giving a shit whether you're cool. And I remembered that, and I still remember that. And it's like, look at me now, I'm definitely not cool.
Well, you're cool in my books.
Thank you. Well, you're cool too.
But you know what I mean? Like that being yourself, and like, because somebody can be portraying something for so long, and and people can see through the bullshit. You know, people see, like, for so long, you can see, like, oh, yeah, it's cool. And once you meet the person and they're not really what they're portraying on social or whatever, you know, like, people can see the bullshit. And
yeah. I noticed that a few years ago when, you know, because nobody really knew me, you know, I did a bunch of those videos as I was building that dustbin, and I went to the handbuild show. And to start with, my friend Dave, whose idea it was to do these videos. And I'm like, what? Who's going to watch these? I said, if I'm going to do it, I'm just going to be myself. I'm not, I'm going to do anything else. But then I end up, you know, I went to the handbuild show and people, they're like, wow, you're just like you are in the videos. And they were surprised by it. I'm like, well, what did you think I was going to be like? You know, it's like I was surprised, maybe a little insulted even. It's like, you know, like, wow, you're a nice guy.
Yeah.
I'm like, what do you think? I was a prick?
Yeah, like, I get the same thing. And it's like, well, why would I try to pretend I'm something that I'm not? But I guess people do. So that's when they're like, oh, when you're in real person, like, and you are nice, they're like, what are you doing to, like, scream?
I'll never forget. It was at the handbuild show a few years ago. I remember, you know, I was talking to some people and this guy come over, you know, a younger guy, and he had two younger kids, like a three-year-old little boy and a five-year-old girl. And that, the little girl was excited about all the motorcycles. So, yeah, I love kids. And so I got down, I'm talking to these kids, and I'm like, you know, so which is the coolest bike? And she was so happy and so animated and just loved the motorcycles. Aww. Well, somebody took a picture and posted it on some social media thing and tagged me. And they had a caption, Craig Rodsmith's even nice to children. And I'm like, what did you think I was going to do? Fucking beat the shit out of him or something? And it's like, I mean, I understand what they meant, but it's like, you know, what the fuck? Like, yeah, I usually eat children for breakfast. I know. Like,
it's like a snack.
I'm even so nicer. I'm even nice to dogs and cats too.
Oh, probably more than to people. Like, dogs.
Yeah, a lot of people. Yeah.
We were like saying that, like, that we're gonna figure out like a sign when we're riding. If we like one sees a dog, like, we have all to stop and pet the dog because we're all like love dogs, you know. But yeah. You know, it's funny, like, how, like, people's perception, like, what they think, like a social construct or in their minds, right? Of like how somebody is or is not, you know. I think it's like super. It's funny though, like, that people create images or ideas of what somebody is, you know.
Yeah, it's all this perception, you know, which is especially, you know, ever since the advent of social media, I'm sure it's way more prevalent. Because I'm sure there's a lot of people, you know, these celebrities on social media that are, you know, it's like the Kardashians. It's like, you know, I actually don't know what they do. I don't, you know, I don't follow that sort of stuff. But, you know, I remember I watched an interview. Actually, it was David Letterman interview, and he had Kim Kardashian on. And she actually seems like a really nice person.
I know. Like, and smart too, like, because she built an empire, you know? Like, but I have no idea what they do. I've never seen this show. I never done, you know?
Right.
So
but I think, you know, they worked out, you know, they could basically make money off basically doing nothing, and just because of who they are. I mean, I know that, like, she was a daughter of some lawyer or whatever, but, you know, it's like, you know, we tend to do this. We judge, and then there's probably a lot of celebrities that seem really nice that are complete and utter pricks. So it probably goes both ways. But
some people, like, they use social to put their alter ego too. So a lot of people, like, there's a lot of, like, I notice, you know, like, people are writing and they just do it on the weekends, which is fine. I don't, you know, it doesn't matter. And they just, and all of their content is about their motorcycle and riding. And it's, you know, so that's kind of how their niche and how they want to portray that in a specific medium. And that's fine too. You know what I mean? It's just like, I think it's just more of like the social constructs of, like, who, you know, what are you curating and putting out there, kind of thing. Right. Yeah. So it's very interesting just to see that. But, you know, like, as this world of motorcycles is kind of like growing, and I see like growing and growing and expanding, you know, because it's not just like to the specific kind of like rebels, you know. It's like, you know, you see like all of like socials and, you know, all of like different cultures and backgrounds, like,
right,
you know, like you see Latino people like me, you know. You know,
it, you're a Latino. Yeah, I never knew that.
Mexican. Yeah. Yeah, are you Australian? You know, but you see like all of these different people coming together with, because right, like once you ride, like there's something that clicks, and they're like, you cannot take
right,
it's kind of like once you go black, well, once you go black, you never go back.
Interesting analogy.
You know,
no, but it's like, but it's also, you know, you get a lot of these people like, you know, I've met other people that ride motorcycles or build motorcycles, and they instantly think that we're going to be friends, and yeah, for the most part, along with most people. But I tell you what, there's a lot of dicks that ride motorcycle. Mm-hmm. I'm not automatically going to be your best friend just because you ride a motorcycle, sort of
exactly
thing. And it's just, you know, it depends on the person still. And exactly, it's
and it can be somebody that doesn't ride like Dave, and he's amazing, and I want to be best friends with him and go and see his Sasquatch. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but exactly. Dave's a perfect example. Dave's never ridden a motorcycle in his life. Dave wouldn't know. And not only that, Dave wouldn't know a screwdriver from a wrench. You know, he's like, like it's great, but we're best friends.
Yeah.
And we get along and we hang out. We got stuff to talk about, and it's, yeah, it's fun. Who cares?
What's the truth? You know, like there's people that, me too, I would never socialize. Even if we're in the same writing group, I'm just right with you, but I would never socialize with you. Not because I don't see anything aligned. Like I had groups, you know, like that, they will drink too much, or they will do certain things that I'm right, like, that doesn't go aligned to what I do in my daily life. I will respect you, and I'll, you know, I'll be friendly with you, but it doesn't mean that I'm not going, right, you know. And like, yeah, but if you're like going to go and get tacos, I'm coming. You know, that I'll socialize in taco day. You know, like those kind of things. Oh, talking about food, when you go to Italy, what is your favorite thing to eat, and where will you eat it?
Well, I've only really spent time in northern Italy around Como, Lake Como, Mandello, you know, Lecco, that region. But I've always just loved Italian food. So it's usually pasta. I like seafood also, although northern in that region, seafood's not huge. That's more a southern Italy thing. But yeah, just pasta and red sauces. But before I even left Australia or traveled anywhere, I've just always loved Italian food. The funny thing is, I've always had this thing about Italian. Uh-huh. I grew up with a lot of Italians, the part of Melbourne I'm from, northern part, a lot of Italian immigrants. So a lot of my friends, their parents were born in Italy. They were born in Australia. And so I grew up around a lot of Italian culture and Greek culture. Melbourne, nice, ironically, is good. Melbourne's the biggest Greek populated city outside of Athens, apparently.
Oh, wow.
My brother-in-law is Greek. My brother-in-law is Greek, and most of my friends growing up were either Greek or Italian. I didn't have many Anglo-white friends. It was mainly Greeks and Italians. But my first car was an Italian car. I had a Fiat, but not a little Fiat like you get in America. I had a six-cylinder, 1962, 2.3-liter six-cylinder Fiat, big four-door. And I'm like, wow, this car's really cool. And then I had a lot of Alfa Romeos, more Fiat sports cars, and, you know, Italian motorcycles. They had a lot of older Ducatis, and it's like the way Italians do stuff, you know, because it's, you know, they build things that perform really well. But even if it doesn't perform well, even if it's a piece of shit, it fucking looks good.
It's like, Italian, yeah, you know, like when they say like bad words too, you're like, oh, keep going.
It's like, you know, the Germans are like, you know, if a German says something, like a German says, I love you, ich liebe dich, it's like, Jesus.
Oh,
and it's like, it sounds horrible. It's like, what did I do wrong? But amore, mi amore. Yeah. It's like, yeah, Italian, it just sounds good.
Oh,
it's
like, sounds so good. Yeah, anything that they say or they do, you know, the food.
Yeah, so good. And the first time I went to Italy, I was, you know, I didn't know, I think I had this perception of what Italy would be like before I went there. And it was better than I thought. And it's like, the Italians Well, you've met, when we went to London, you met Ariana and made her your friends there.
Awesome.
They are just the most fun. They're like Australians, but they speak Italian and live in Italy. It's like they just want to drink some beer and laugh and pick on each other. It's fucking awesome.
They're amazing. When I was 18, I traveled with 4 Italians, hitchhiked all the way to Panama. 3 didn't speak even Spanish, 1 a little bit, and somehow we just had the best time of our lives, you know? So yeah, Italians are like, I feel like it's like the whole, like, you know, because of the romance letter, and they're like very, you know, but that's so cute that I didn't know that there was such a big community and Greeks in Australia. That is very interesting.
Yeah, it's very, a lot of Europeans, especially, you know, through the 40s and 50s, you know, after the Second World War, a lot of Europeans in general, but definitely Italians and Greeks. We have Maltese people too, and, you know, a lot of, you know, Portuguese.
Your first motorcycle there was a PSA?
I grew up very working class. My parents, we didn't have a lot of money, and my mum and dad said, what do you want for Christmas? Oh, I want a motorcycle. Well, get a job and buy it yourself. Now I got a paper route, saved all my money. And the only thing I could afford was this old BSA 125 BSA Bantam. And it was my first bike. And there was, you know, a lot of kids in my neighborhood, you know, let's say, these people were white trash. And their parents would go into Hawk, and all my friends, they had like YZ80s and RM80s and stuff like that. And, yeah, I was, everyone laughed at me because I had a 1957 BSA Bantam.
But you pay for it, you know. It's like
Not only that is, I learned how to work on motorcycles because it was a piece of shit. So I always had to keep working on it to make it run. I think that's why my parents didn't have a problem with it, because it didn't run that often. So I couldn't hurt myself with it. but I did hurt myself with it a lot. But the interesting thing was, as time went on, these other kids, because their parents, not all the kids I grew up with, but a lot of kids, you know, my neighborhood, you know, the parents would just kind of placate them. It's like, you buy them an RM80 or YZ80 or something. Mm-hmm. Well, within a year, this thing had flat tires, and it was up against the garage, and the seat was ripped, and it didn't run. So I still have my paper route. So I'd go and buy these bikes off these kids for like $30 or $40, and then I'd fix them. And then sell
nice.
Them.
Nice.
And then, you know, so I learned. So I by the time I was probably 13, 14 years old, I'd already had like 50 motorcycles, because I was buying them, fixing them, and then selling them. And then when I got more money, I'd build up. And then it's like, I remember when I was 13 or 14, I think, I had some cool bikes. I had a Mako motocross, a 250 motocrosser. I had a Montesa Capra. And so I got into European bikes. Now, because I had some money, and it's like, so I end up with, you know, I'd buy European, like Bultacos, Montesas, Makos, which were, they weren't as fast or reliable as Japanese bikes, but they were way cooler. I just liked the style of them.
You know. But it's still like that kind of industrious kind of thing, and being curious about and trying and fixing them. I love that, you know, because some people are just kind of like, just take it to you know, whoever. And I'm like, that's kind of how I started, like, fixing my 1970, you know, like, I want to know how this fixed. I still don't know everything, but I was just like, let me know a couple of things, because I'm writing this shit, you know?
Well, it gets back to the same thing we were talking about before with, you know, women working on cars, bikes, whatever. Remember a while ago, your alternator went bad in your Jeep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're in Houston, I'm in Chicago, and you were upset. Oh, I can't do it. I'm like, yeah, of course you can do it. And it's like, I'm like, no, I can't. Yes, you can. So we, like FaceTime, it's like, it was 4 hours of FaceTime. I'm like, no, take that bolt. No, not that bolt. No, that bolt. This bolt? No, that bolt. I'm like, God. But it was like, now I'm getting frustrated because you're getting frustrated. And I'm like, no, that one. But you did it.
Yeah.
You know,
well, like, the first time was the hard, and then like the second time was like a piece of cake.
Yeah.
Like it was like, whoo. But it's just like the I think like it happened the same with bikes, you know, starting to like riding the bikes. It was like, oh shit, like how can I do this? And when somebody saying, I believe you can get into the freeway. I was like, no way. And I was like, I think, you know, if this person believes that, I think it's like not just a woman thing, but like when a person believes in you and they tell you that, I believe that that kind of like makes you more capable, not capable, like you already have the capability, but it kind of like makes you more courage, have a little more courage, I think.
Well, that's, it's exactly the word, encouragement. And I do that with my kids, you know,
yeah.
And the same I did it with you when I do it with, you know, yeah, you can do this. And yeah. I think that's one of the reasons me and Dave have become such good friends, because Dave is very like-minded, because everything we've done together, you know, and he's doing on his own or I'm doing, he's like, yeah, I think you can do it. Yeah, I think, like a lot of times we can't do it, but at least we try.
We try,
and it's like, and it's like, raising my kids, I tell them, like, do you think I can do this? Yeah, I think so. Like on a bicycle. Do you think I can do a wheelie? Yeah, of course you can. And they crash, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm a bad parent. And it's like, because I was teaching my kids.
Yeah.
I taught my kids to take a chance.
Yes, exactly. And you can see it on your motorcycles, you know, like you're taking a chance on you more than, like, you know what I mean? Than anything.
Right.
On yourself. Yeah. Like that challenge and like trying something new. And that thing that's why like people gravitate to that, you know, because it's like you.
Well, it's the same thing as, you know, you look at, you know, over the last 20 or 30 years, society is like, you know, we're all, worried about germs, we're worried about this, we're worried about, we become so sanitary and safe. Yeah, I grew up like you might have, like I grew up in a car with no seat belts and a steel dashboard.
Yes.
And it's like,
we'll be like in the back of the truck and then your dad will go faster, so like on the bump, so everybody's like jumping in the back, you know, like 15 kids.
They would put our parents in jail if they did that now.
Yes, and it's like, it would be like child endangerment and shit. Yeah.
I remember I was like 5 years old in our neighborhood. My dad would sit me on his lap and I would be steering the car going down the street. I'm like, I did it with my kids.
Did it with my kid. Don't tell anybody.
I think people are going to know now. Dude. But I did it with my kids. Yeah. Like, I remember going places like, you know, going from one friend's house, you know, go there, somewhere for a barbecue, put my kid on the lap. It's like, all right, I'll do the pedals. You get a steering wheel. Drive all the way home.
Yes. I used to be like when I was like, since I was seven, I will sit in like, my dad had like this 1986 Chevy and I will sit in the middle because it's like the big bench and I'll be the one changing the gears. And he will never tell me when. I will just listen to it. And that when I started riding motorcycles, it just became very easy because of like the whole gears. Like I learned how to drive in stick shift. That was like my first, it was like this, a bug. But like those kind of things, you know, like with this car, the computer was all fucked up. And like, that's something that, you know, like, yes, computers are cool, but like, you know, the old school, you know, mechanics and the old school things that somehow, sometimes it's got, like, you know, like you will have somebody to do it with, right? And it kind of like makes that connection of doing like, I will be helping my dad. Now I have a computer and I don't have to ask my son to change the, you know? So you can see like how, in a way, like, yes, it makes things easier, but also like sometimes it disconnects people.
Right.
I guess, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think I tried to do that in my life. I live really simply. Like I don't have a dishwasher. I don't have an ice maker in my fridge. I don't, you know, I like living like that.
Yeah.
And I drive a $500 Volvo that I've had.
You change those plates? Do you put those plates?
Actually, I did.
Yes.
you know how you told me like a month or two to change the plates. You know when I did it? Yesterday.
I am so proud of you.
It's like I didn't put the new plates on for so long. I think now I put them on. They're going to expire in like a month. That's how long I didn't put them on for.
I noticed. I was like, this is like a year old. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They were the temporary plates that expired by like 7 months or something.
That is fine. I just needed to know. Just so that.
I took care of that.
I'll remind you in a month. How are the neighbors? The neighbors good?
Oh, yeah. Jose, Pedro, those guys.
Yeah, they're so
I'm very fortunate to have good neighbors. And there's a lot of shit talking between us, of course.
I love that. Like, he was so nice. I love that.
Oh, I couldn't ask for a better neighbor. I remember, it's funny, a couple of years ago, I remember Australia, I don't know if it was the Olympics or it was some soccer game. And they had a big screen TV in his shop. and it was Mexico versus Australia. And I'm in there. I know Mexico is going to beat Australia. But I, like, so I'm in there with like at least a dozen Mexicans. And I'm like, FIBA Australia! And it's like, I'm like, Australia's going to beat you. And it's like, oh, Australia got beaten by Mexico. They just laughed their asses off at me. It was awesome.
So funny, but, yeah.
Yeah, it's yeah, I'm very fortunate to have him as a neighbor.
It's a good community, and your town. Right. I was just thinking about that the other day because I'm editing the last episode, right, and of the YouTube, and I have like some images of like the little town, and we're riding through it. It's such a like I love like that kind of like I don't think I ever experienced America like that. Like I done the coast, and right. Seeing how like that's the majority of people, you know, like a simpler, beautiful towns where it's like, it feels like such like a neighborhoodly kind of thing, you know?
So yeah. It's middle America, the Midwest, you know, coming from Australia, you know, I got married and had kids and got divorced. And the reason I never left, I come from a hot climate. I'm from Australia. And now I live in like the subarctic city of Chicago. And then there's summer and spring here is amazing.
It was beautiful.
Winters are like brutal. But there's, you know, I'll move away from here one day, but I will miss the Midwest. The Midwest is really cool.
Yeah.
It's just it's middle America. Like you said, everyone thinks about the coast. Everyone, you know, people think about the South or the East Coast or the West Coast. And, you know, a lot of people I've spoken to is like, oh, I've never been to Chicago. I've never been to Milwaukee. I've never been to Minneapolis. And it's like, Minneapolis, I lived in Minneapolis for a while. It's cold as fuck, but what
it's
a cool
beautiful.
City.
Beautiful, yeah.
It's the music. Out. Well, you think about the music that's come from Minnesota, Minneapolis. It's like the extremes. It's like Bob Dylan is from Duluth, Minnesota. You know, basically started his career in Minneapolis. But then I'm not a big fan of Prince, but, you know, I respect what he did. But then Prince is from Minneapolis. So it's like one extreme to another. It's just, I was a tour manager. Music's my other big passion. And I was tour manager for a friend of mine, and his biggest market was Minneapolis. So I spent a lot of time in Minneapolis and even lived up there for a while. And so I've traveled all over America to music clubs everywhere, coast to coast, top to bottom, you know, even into Canada. And Minneapolis is probably the best music scene in America. Even better than New York, LA, in my opinion.
Wow.
It's really cool. There's Prince used to own the club. It's called the First Avenue in Minneapolis. And First Avenue, 7th Street Entry. We've been there so many times. It's been voted, I think, by Rolling Stone or something, the best music club in America for so many years. It really is cool. And the interesting thing is in Minneapolis, if you go to a show in Minneapolis, let's say it's a punk show, there's all kinds of people there. Or if you go to, if it's a reggae show, there's all kinds of people there.
So
or if it's
specific.
Whatever. Okay. Whereas you go to other cities like Chicago, like you go to a punk rock show, it's all punk rockers. You go to this, it's all this. And a lot of cities are like that. But Minneapolis is like, nobody gives a shit.
Huh. That's so cool. That's my next stop. I was going to stop this last time, but then I was just like, I just need to get to Chicago. You know? Yes.
Yeah.
I want to go there and the Harley Museum and explore Milwaukee at one point, come to Mama Try or events, you know?
Yeah.
Well, we can wrap it up. Just wanted to say I am so very grateful and I am so very honored that you even always take the time to talk to me and always like, we don't want just not motorcycles. We talk about everything, and you're one of the people that I will call to ugly cry if I need to, you know. Because you're my one of my favorite people. You're my friend, you know.
Well, that's it. It's like next time I'll make the coffee French press.
Oh shoot! And I'll get you some fish and sticks.
That's fish and chips, you idiot.
No, fish and sticks. They look like
all right.
Sticks.
Yeah.
No, but like seriously, and we need to do like another road trip. So finish that bike soon And I know that I want to go and we have, no, I know that we are going to do ice, like ride motorcycles in the snow. No snowmobile.
Ice racing. Yeah. We could, I'd like to try that. We should do, that. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, like when, yeah. Maybe like, is it like Mama Try happening? Like,
Mama Tried. The funny thing is, the last few Mama Trieds, they always had the ice racing, but unfortunately, the last few, it didn't get cold enough. Nothing froze.
Really? That's so weird.
Yeah. So they haven't had it in a few years. So
it's like a global warming is a thing.
Yep. That's what it is.
But I wish I was like down the street, because then I'll be like bugging you like every day for reals.
You bug me all the time anyway, but that's fine. It was good to see you, mate. You did a really good job.
It was so fun. I when I showed somebody like that sizzle reel that I made, somebody was like, I want to know whose shop is that. And I'm like, fine, you didn't give me feedback. but yeah, like there were a couple of people that were like, that was so cool. And I wish I could see more of like the whole process. So that was like super cool. And I enjoyed so much, not just like being there, but like just being around you and being like in where, you know, in your world, darling. You know? Yeah.
Yes. It was pretty cool. It was fun. It was good. We got to hang out with Dave and Jose. And yeah, it was really cool.
I know. Then you come, you see me, you went to my house in Venice. Now you had to come to my house in California, in Houston.
In Houston.
Yeah. So we'll do a road trip soon.
Sounds good.
My son is screaming. You hear him?
Yes.
He's playing with kids. Like, you're killing it. Anyways, good to see you. I'm so grateful for your time. And I will be texting you later on today.
Sounds good, darling.
I love you. Have a beautiful day.
Love you too. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, this is Carolina. Let's go beyond the throttle.